The AG may be saying bad things about me, but it's a lady of Barbacoa that got me worked up this week.
It's a circular firing squad for Democrats, finally. Burbank versus Becker. The fight is on.
And the Confederate flag, gone for good. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I am so pleased to have on the political left State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning, Natalie.
And on the political right, Speaker of the House, Greg Hughes.
Good morning, Natalie.
We are in the dog days of summer, and yet elections are truly around the corner. I noticed that this week Bobby Jindal has entered the presidential fray, and we're hearing that next week Chris Christie will be in there. Wow. Buckle up.
I'm still with Trump. I am. I do it all by comb-overs. If you got the best comb-over, you're ready to lead. You're ready to be commander-in-chief. That's me. That's, I don't know.
Oh, and then,
it's as good of a litmus test as anything else.
Jim, I read in a story about our former governor, John Huntsman, saying lots of nice things about Hillary Clinton, you know, when he worked for her in the State Department as an ambassador and whatnot. Kind of interesting things going on.
This is not recent, though. This is something after he got appointed, and it was part of the kiss-up process, as he was leaving cold, hard, red Utah and going to deep blue State Department, and he just wanted to get it clear, his terrific rapport with his new boss.
Yeah. I love it. Well, it's going to be interesting, but even closer to home, I understand that the mail-in ballots for the mayoral race will go out July 13th, believe it or not.
Wow. It's coming on us already.
Yeah, the primary is in August, the general election in November, and we've got Becker, Biskupski, Garrett, a couple other candidates all vying for the Salt Lake City mayor.
You know what? That's a race. I would have told you 6 weeks ago it's not. As much as I like a lot of the candidates and I thought it was a deep field, I thought Ralph, having been a successful mayor and raised a lot of money, I just thought that this was a little bit of a walkthrough. But I'll tell you what, there is blood in the water. There, your political allies this year are not to be assumed to be allies necessarily. I mean, they are coming after this mayor. I mean, it is not. I think he's going to have a very difficult election season.
Just to remind our listeners, this is a nonpartisan race that has a runoff in the primary. Top two advance.
Jim? It's all by mail. It's going to be an interesting experiment to see what happens to voter turnout. Look, a lot of great politicians, including Cal Rampton in his book, say do not run for three terms. It just doesn't work out the third term. You're out of energy. Your people are at the arrogant level. You're sure that there's projects that only you can finish. But guess what? On the balance, a lot of politicians who have gone through it say, you know what?
Don't do the third.
Don't do the third. That would have been great advice for this mayor, because a lot of things that have built up over the years and everybody's gone, Ralph, you've done a great job and we love you, and the rest are suddenly the scab wounds are popping up everywhere. And Greg is right. It's a real race.
So we had the Chief Burbank change, where he's no longer police chief of Salt Lake City. Now we're hearing that the city is refusing to pay sick leave pay to him. $23,000 of money that Burbank believes he's owed, thinks he's going to sue. Wow.
It's ugly. I'm telling you.
That's
saying,
the blood in the water.
Like,
you're
going to punch me in the nose, I'm going to punch you back. At least the mayor's got some fight in him. I mean, he's not going to take this lightly, which, again, that's what I love about politics. I love the arena. I mean, they're going to have I'm sure he didn't just pull this out of thin air. He's got some rationale. We don't know it yet, but I'll tell you. Like I said, it's getting ugly, but at least the mayor shows some fight. He's not going to take it. He's going to punch back.
It's petty. It is so petty, and this is not what you expect out of leaders. Remember what happened. There was a dispute. The mayor wrote here's your resignation speech saying, I'm a great mayor. You're a terrible chief of police. The chief of police said, I'm not reading that. They said, fine, you're fired as of now. Give me your badge. And then somebody in the office said, we want your uniform. And he said, now? I'm wearing my uniform. And then they locked him out of his office.
Now, this is
a chief that everybody says, maybe he made a big mistake on this discrimination issue, but there's never been a whiff of lack of integrity or decency or anything else. So this is just another kind of petty kind of snatch at the chief. It's beneath the dignity of the mayor. If you're going to fire him, fire him. But you don't have to get down to the petty level.
Go, Greg. Go, Greg.
I love it so much. It's so fun to see Democrats going after each other's jugulars. I'm so happy to see this finally away from the Republican Party. Let me tell you how I knew this was good. This is exactly why I knew this thing was going to get real. Okay? Things are getting real all around us. The narrative. See, politicians, to the public, I just want to give you some inside baseball here. Politicians, unfortunately, look out the window, see people moving somewhere, and yell to a staffer, hey, find out where they're going so I can lead them there. Okay? Well, the narrative used was Burbank, the chief, the fire chief. There's all this sexual harassment going. This goes straight to the top. This mayor can't handle the city and his department heads. So the mayor says, hey, I got to lead here. I got to show that we don't tolerate sexual harassment, because the narrative was beating the tar out of him, right? So he goes straight after this police chief, where there has been allegations and it looks like he didn't do the right thing or he covered it up, whatever. He tries to get out in front of this to lead the people to the place everyone demands to go. And as soon as he does it, they go, well, that's petty. Well, yeah. that's wrong. Why did you do that? All of a sudden, the facts don't matter. He can't get in front of a crowd that at the end of the day – people just want to go after him. That's what's really going on here, and I'm telling you, it is blood sport. And you know what? Finally, it's not the Republicans doing it to each other. I love it. Keep going, Jim.
Greg, you do point out, though, that what's missing in the whole discussion is the fact that did sexual harassment occur, and was it handled correctly, and what should have happened, and what's the right remedy to it?
Well, let me tell you.
And in the end, you know, it's just a big mess, because, you know, the guy that's accused of sexual harassment gets his unused sick leave. The guy that allowed him to, you know, stay on for long enough so that he could retire doesn't get his. It's just a mess.
Fundamentally, if you think a guy's just sexually harassed, and you might argue the parts or the clays, but he ended up, he did leave, right? So it wasn't a question of, you got to get out, okay? Whatever's happened here, whatever photos you've shared, you got to get out. Well, he got to wait until he could enjoy his full pension or whatever the story is. Nobody was happy with that narrative. Nobody thought that was appropriate. Yeah. But then when you get rid of the guy that made the decision, they're like, well, he was a super guy.
Yeah.
He was the best chief of police we ever had. That's where you know we're not talking real. You're talking politics here.
Go ahead, Jim.
Paul Raleigh had an interesting comment. They went back to the mayor's polling. The polling right before they got the actual question. The polling right before the mayor made that I'm going to lead the band decision had the sexual harassment issue with the chief off the charts, as the people being very agitated. So suddenly we see that integrity of, yeah, I'm going to fire this guy. Oh, yeah, and my polls show that's the best thing for me to do. So that goes a long way to explaining the suddenness of all of this.
Here's the real problem with it all, though, is that the most important issues to the city, is it prosperous? Is the livability agenda playing out for this mayor? These things are just lost. We're not talking about them. And I think a close look would show that Mayor Becker's progress as mayor has been phenomenal. We have a city. You look at every economic indicator, Jim. I've looked at these, and the city is on the up. And then you look at what's going on out at the airport. It's great. You look at North Temple, the way, you know, we've got a new viaduct. We've got the rail lines there. I know people don't like the bike stuff, but I just spent time in Amsterdam. I think it's pretty cool.
Now that's
I hear it's
like,
cool. I haven't embraced this concept, but I see it. I get
spoken
it.
Spoken like a true Republican there, Natalie.
I'll tell you what, dance with you, Brunya. I wish that my colleagues in elected office would leave their pollsters alone. Stop doing it. I know most do, especially as you get higher in office. This becomes one of your mainstays. You got to know where the people are going so you can lead them there. Just do the job, man. No one's going to accuse me. I get editorial cartoons that put me in reverse pinstripe suits and Tommy guns like I'm a mobster. So I'm not looking at a pollster. I'm just saying it's liberating, guys. Just do what you think is right.
I'm just all smiles in the studio. Did Greg just say reverse pinstripe suits? I like that term.
Pat Bagley drew me in a reverse pinstripe suit. I kid you not. And I have one, by the way. I got to admit.
Probably hanging in your office, Greg.
It is. Yeah, come see it.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the Confederate flag and the Orem Owls. I'm Natalie Gochner. Stay tuned.
Jim DeBack is proudly, stably, and always right on the left.
Always right? No, you are not. This is Greg Hughes on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and I get to wrestle with these two guys, but I sure enjoy being with them. Hey, we're going to talk about the Confederate flag, but before we do that, we got a state of emergency declared in Garfield County. And they're saying that restrictive federal land management policies have put them in a situation where their school enrollment is in decline, and people are leaving, and it's just not a place to be. And they're blaming it on Uncle Sam and the Grand Staircase, Escalante National Monument, other land policies. Greg, did this come to your desk as speaker, or has this really been something that's been in the southern part of our state and not a state house issue?
It has not come across my desk, but it is not something that surprises me at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at our state institutional trust lands, these are lands that we have a way to, and they're scattered across the state of Utah, but they generate dollars, real mm-hmm. dollars, through leasing, through all kinds of different mechanisms. But it becomes clear to policymakers that the land that we have, managed responsibly, mind you, generate we got like $1 billion sitting in this account for school children, and they get these dollars that create interest get sent to community councils in every single elementary, middle, and high school in mm-hmm. Utah. And you can see, I feel as a lawmaker, as I get the feedback from these community councils, parents, teachers, where those dollars go, the land does generate. And that's how states get to enjoy such mm-hmm. high funding per pupil.
And the point being that the federal lands don't have that
yes,
same
and
mandate.
As soon mm-hmm. as you see land that is not able to generate dollars like that, and you don't have to go put an oil rig underneath a natural arch. We're not talking about scarring the land. We're talking about responsible management. It has a nexus to our school children, and it's one of the reasons, whether the left likes to admit it or not, why our funding is so limited and so low. States that enjoy property tax, states that have access to all their land, have higher per pupil funding. There's a correlation, and we ought to pay attention to it, and it's what Garfield County is trying to explain to the rest of Utah and to the federal government. I understand the problem.
Jim, I'm ready for you to defend Utah's beautiful public lands, but I have to just, as I turn the time over to you, say that as I would take my kids south in the car all growing up, I could always point out to them where there were state lands and where there were not state lands. And you can identify the state lands because they're like change, you know, everything's they're not preserved, Greg.
Oh, no.
You can point them out from the roads.
Look, I would challenge that, Natalie. I've seen maps of forest fires. Okay. Uh-huh. And there is a correlation between runaway forest fires and the damage of land
and
open space,
land.
Federal land versus state managed land. The state, our state department, they are looking and they are managing those lands in an appropriate way where you don't see the forest fires and some of the damage you're seeing on some of the federal land. And I understand it. The federal land's so big, it's hard to manage it that way. But I think that the state, if you got closer to the people, there'd be a more responsible way to manage that land.
All right, Jim, go ahead.
So much there.
Where do I start?
What happened, there was a wonderful nexus a few years ago between the information that Utah is pathetic in its support for public schools and this preposterous idea that we have to have some excuse to take over all this federal lands. So the political heads all got in a room and went, oh, we'll merge them. We'll say the reason we have pathetic educational funding is because we don't have all of this federal land. And then over 2 or 3 years and millions in lawsuits, they came up with a huge 700-page study. This is our legislature. This isn't some wacky left-wing think tank. And guess what? They studied it. They went through it. They used every conceivable upside on what revenues would be brought in. And they went and tapped down every possible expense. And when they got done, they said, well, we think if we took over there's 32 million acres of land, we could bring in up to $300 million a year into the state. Except all of that was predicated on $94 a barrel gasoline. The
oil.
Point is oil. Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe gasoline.
Man, there you go. We'll take that.
My point is, this is just like a little fantasy that makes a good line when you're speaking to red meat Republicans. It has no connection whatsoever to reality as far as funding education. What CITLA does is under $40 million a year. It's nice. Glad they do it. The real solution to all of this is getting rid of the rhetoric sitting down with the federal government, understanding they're the senior partner, getting rid of all these crazy little slivers of CITLA land, and understanding who the boss is, who owns the land, and trying to get them to work with us to come up with sensible solutions. But Utah politicians cannot do that because there is so much red meat. There's so much rhetoric. There's so much political advantage. And there's so much awfulness in getting the right-wingers riled up. They fight this useless battle. That's sad. That's what ought to end.
Greg, Salt Lake Tribune opined in an editorial that rural America is in decline throughout this country. And they pointed out that with low oil prices and coal losing the battle to natural gas, that Garfield County's in a world of hurt. And it's economic related to the energy industry and not like other states that have a lot of private lands. I mean, it seems like, isn't it just a bit of a bridge too far to claim a state of emergency?
You know what? I'll tell you, I don't think – here's a study. Why does Wyoming have the highest per pupil funding? Wyoming, it's a – you know, why that state? Mm-hmm. Access to their land. The severance tax that arrives that they use directly for their school children, there is a nexus there, and it doesn't take a lot to see it. We might not like that answer, and we're not saying just mine the daylights out of all the open space.
That's,
you can manage land and keep those space. I'll tell you what, if
I
you
think
want
it
to
helps
the world,
that they only
even
have 850,000 people.
It does, but I'll tell you this.
More than a granite school
I'll tell you this. If you wanted to pave the world and you wanted to start in Utah, I tell you, if you were the most cynical anti-environmentalist person, there is so much open space in this state, you couldn't – it'd take you 10 generations
and this
to
is something
to,
I keep wanting
a tiny bit.
The prison relocation group to figure out.
Oh, my gosh.
It is.
Is it time for rants already?
No,
I'm ready. I got a rant coming, man.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Jim DeBacchus and Greg Hughes. Okay, how about what's going on with the Confederate flag? I mean, isn't it a pity that it has taken this killing in South Carolina for the state to get serious about removing the Confederate flag from the State House? I mean, that should have happened decades ago.
You know what, Natalie? It's a battle flag. It's not just the Confederate flag. I've learned that the white trim around the flag mm-hmm. is their battle flag, okay? I will tell you this. Hats off to Mitt Romney, mm-hmm. okay?
Yeah.
Because what I think his role is right now, what I think he's doing is he's trying to save Republicans from themselves. He's saying, look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get out there and I'm going to start creating some strong narratives that are intuitive and that we all believe in. But in primaries, you know, back to our past segment, where are the people going so I can lead them there? In primaries, people tend to shift too hard left as mm-hmm. well as right. And I think he's saying, hey, you know, this we don't do this. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know what, Nikki Haley, the governor, said, you know what, I think he's right. Thank goodness we've got some people in there that can create some strong national narratives, and it's past due. And I have to tell you, even myself, this is not an area where I was all up in arms about. I was not. But I concur wholly that it is time to move on from that chapter of our country's history.
Jim, I think I know where you're going to land on this, but give us the perspective from the Orem Owls and what you saw.
You know, you're going to talk about a Confederate flag. How about the Orem Owls?
I'll tell you what bothered me about that. And I find out sometimes a lot of these on the fringe issues for Utah by people calling me from the East Coast to get a comment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because you're
East
sort
Coast
of
media.
A spokesperson for liberal Utah.
And I
let's
know.
Just
you're
be
such
honest.
The wine and cheese.
He's on both sides
cocktail.
Of the aisle, and then he's on New York Times.
He's in the cocktail party circuit with all the uppity ups. Come on, tell us how that
Cadillac.
Goes. Tell us how the other half
I
lives.
I said
Jim.
To this reporter, "Look, this is not the Deep South. These are not good old boys. This is not what you think it is. If that's the way you're going to portray it, this is." These are just a few clueless people with, I am guessing, with hearts of gold that it didn't even enter into their heads that this would be offensive. I absolutely believe that. I've never been to an Owls game. I don't know anything about them. But there is no venom in this. This is not a David Duke sending
a
secret message.
What did they call the night? I can't even remember what they called it.
Caucasian
night?
Heritage.
You got to be kidding me.
Night, something like that. Yeah, it was unbelievable. It is. Thank you, Jim, for saying that.
Caucasian
it is absolutely
heritage.
The case. When I was going to then Utah Valley State College, UVU, I was the editorial editor at the school paper.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I had a little column called World According to Greg. It was great. I loved it. It's still the World According to Greg. No, here's the thing. In that newsroom, I had one of the editors or one of the staffers there. He's a fellow student. He came in and he's like, I just had the worst experience in the world. I was at the R.C. Willie in Orem, and I saw this wonderful, well-dressed African-American family, and they were looking at really expensive TVs and things. And I went up to them and I said, it is so inspiring to see a well-dressed African-American family upwardly mobile. It is so great to see. And they were offended. They yelled at me. Why? And I said, this is a joke, right? This is irony. Wow. This is your column. You're going to write this? Is this some – I mean – Yeah. Did you really do this? And he said, yeah, he had no clue.
There's an innocence
being
there.
Being a kid that grew up in Pittsburgh, having many friends, having all kinds, you know, I'm going to tell you that there is just this, mm-hmm. you can call it ignorance, you can call it obliviousness, you can call it whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Attach a pejorative to it, attach a different word. I'm telling you, when you don't grow up with diversity, you miss certain things. The dots do not connect. But I don't think you're going to get government to somehow create it. We've seen from the University of Utah, Pam Perlick, she mm-hmm. said that, you know, we're just about a generation and a half behind the country. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see it. It'll come. But there's just there's some times like this Orem Owls where it is highlighted that there are parts of the country and even in Utah where people are just, you know, they're just missing
it. Let's get it. Greg, I want you to set up this little spat between Jim and our Attorney General's office.
Yeah. So, Jim, I was going to, you know, here's the thing. When I see my friend Jim's name in the paper, it just gets me so excited. It's like, yes, it's so fun to see some arrows heading his way. Well, apparently, the AG's office was frustrated with a Facebook post that our friend broadcast member here posted declaring some intentions coming out of the Attorney General's office. And they have responded that you are a hate mongerer. Now, I haven't heard this. I'm going to defend my friend here. I would say that when he tries to explain the liberal crazy view, it is never from a place of hate. I don't know this guy, so I'm interested. Have they outed you, Jim? Have they found a side of you that we don't know? What's happened here?
I just have to say, as a public communications person, that what is the Attorney General's office doing responding to a Facebook post?
My goodness, yeah.
I don't know. I think it should have a little bit more dignity than that, but Jim, go ahead.
Look, I think I got it figured out. The same day that the Attorney General called me a hate monger and whatever, and all they said was they're looking to go the next step on when the Supreme Court goes on marriage, what I think is a bad audit from the legislative auditors came out, and it really was about ethics and about whistleblower protection, and I think it was a good move. I mean, it kind of deflected. The television stories were about me and him having a feud, and then there wasn't anything about the AG's office needs to get whistleblower protection and ethics guidelines and do the changes that were recommended and that he said he would do 18 months ago. So I give him credit on the PR level. Take shots at me if it helps you, Mr. Attorney General. You know, that's the way I look at the world.
I just tell the AG's office, don't pay attention to Jim's Facebook posts. Goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Greg, we're to our gripes. You have a two or three queued up? Or are you going to?
There's an editorial that's come out in Deseret News by Richard Davis. He's a political science professor at BYU. Says at the bottom, the opinions expressed by Richard Davis do not reflect the opinions of BYU. Anyway, he ran for the chair of the Democrat Party, so we kind of know where his political leanings are. And he says that the public is not being listened to in this prison move. Let me just say again, and you've heard me say this on the show, the way a state acquires land and builds any building, prison, anything at all, under normal statutory requirements is no one ever knows. They go and they make a real estate decision. They surplus land on it could be as small as a 90-day RFP with not one single public hearing. There has been 4 years of public hearings. This has been the most transparent. More stakeholders have been involved in this. The ACLU has come out at these public hearings and has supported the efforts that have gone on for nearly 4 years. People parachute into this issue, think that the last 6 weeks or 4 weeks that they have seen somehow represent an entire process, and they speak from places they know nothing of, including political science professors.
Jim.
I'll be brief with all the swirling politics around me. I went into Barbara Coe yesterday in Sugar House. I got there about the same time as a very nice woman. And I said, here, you go ahead of me. And she smiled and said, great. Then she ordered 23 tacos for her whole damn office while I stood there waiting. And they had everybody going and putting special guacamole and everything else. Give me a break.
It worked. I sent her there. I can't believe my timing.
Listen, I cannot top that, Jim. I cannot top that. I was thinking, should I complain about fireworks? What should I complain about? I guess I'm just going to go back to South Carolina. I'm going to complain that it's 2015 and this is still happening. We have a president of the United States that in a comment said that racism is still part of our DNA. I think that's a travesty. I think we should wash our hands and be done with that. That's my gripe, is that we haven't as a country quite figured that out, but I have great optimism that we will. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by State Senator Jim DeBacchus and Speaker of the House Greg Hughes. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.